When we can create these environments where kids feel emotionally safe to take risks, emotionally safe to be seen because they feel seen, they feel validated for what they do well, and it's normalized that we all have different strengths and weaknesses and we don't all have to do it in this one certain way, it's like people can exhale. They can move out of fight or flight and actually be present to the environment and receptive to learning. If you're a mom with ADHD, navigating the ups and downs of life with a more highly sensitive nervous system, this is your place. Hi, I'm Melissa. In this space, I'm sharing with you the things I've personally learned along my journey as an educator, a parent, an advocate, and as an ADHDer myself. If you're ready to embrace your differences as the unique gifts that they are and start showing up for yourself in new ways that empower you, build self-confidence, and start shifting cycles so you can pass a new way down to your kids, you're in the right spot. I believe that when we get to the root of our symptoms and start healing from the inside out, we not only heal ourselves, but we heal our kids too. Let's talk about it. Hi, friends. Welcome to Reframing Neurodiversity. I'm your host, Melissa Jackson, and I'm here to tell you it's time to see neurodivergence for what it truly is, a gift that benefits us all. As a former teacher, mom to two neurodivergent kids, and as a neurodivergent person myself, I know it's possible to see your neurowiring in a new way. That's why I'm on a mission to reframe the way we view neurodivergence as a collective and to empower us as neurodivergent adults and parents with the language and tools to advocate for ourselves and our kids. Join me each week as my guests and I share our personal experiences paired with cutting-edge research, leaving you feeling seen, validated, and proud of the way your brain works. Ready to get started? Let's dive into today's episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Reframing Neurodiversity podcast. I am your host, Melissa Jackson, and I am very happy to be here with you guys today as we begin this new year of 2024. I don't know about you, but I am moving slowly into this new year. I actually love January. I'm a Capricorn, so it's my birthday month, and I love just the freshness of a new year. But I will say the holidays are a lot for me. You know, I'm neurodivergent, I'm highly sensitive, so my nervous system is tired after December. So one of the things I'm intentionally bringing into this new year is more of the things that feel really good and that I love and that I enjoy, and the work that almost feels like play, like leaning into that more and more. And I will tell you, one of those things is this podcast. You know, it's just honestly something that lights me up. I love connecting with all of you in this way and speaking about these topics that are just so important. And so thank you for being here with me and continuing on this journey with me into this new year. I'm really grateful for you guys. So today I want to talk to you about something you may or may not be familiar with. And it's this neurodivergent identification that's called twice exceptionality, or it's often referred to as 2E as well. 2E is a fairly new term. It's something that if you're a parent or you're neurodivergent yourself and you're throwing that term out to your child's teacher or in your work environment, it's not unlikely that many people are not going to be familiar with what that means yet. However, this doesn't make it any less real, valid, and important to understand. And I really believe that it's something that is going to be coming at the forefront of our diagnostic evaluations and making its way into our DSM and really becoming more prevalent in our educational settings as something to accommodate and understand, because it impacts so many of us. And so many people are misdiagnosed or their diagnosis is missed because it's very complex. The implications of this neurowiring can be serious if we don't meet people where they're at with what they need. So diving into it, essentially what it means to be twice exceptional is that you possess one or more areas of giftedness combined with one or more areas of learning differences. And so when we look at this from like a neuropsychological evaluation standpoint, these are going to be the people who have these asynchronous profiles. And so essentially what this means is that you might have pockets in certain areas that are in that 98th, 99th percentile combined with areas that are maybe in that first, third, fifth percentile. And so these two things together create a very complex situation for people, because so often we're looking at these people and it's like, well, they're so good at math, why aren't they more organized? Why is their executive function so challenged? Why are their social skills so challenged? Or they're so gifted at emotional intelligence and reading people, and yet they're having trouble learning to read. Like, it doesn't make sense. These are those people. They're the people that it's just like, they're so obviously bright. And why are the things that maybe seem even simple to neurotypical people are hard for them? And yet some of these things that seem so challenging, they do so effortlessly. So when I was first learning about this subject, someone said to me, when you've met one 2E person, you've met one 2E person. Because when I first started learning about twice exceptionality, I was trying to put it into this box. You know, in my mind, I was trying to make sense of it. It was like, okay, so, but what if they are really emotionally intelligent and really social, and they've got, you know, these visual spatial skills and this creativity that's off the charts, and they struggle with reading and writing and spelling. But then I know this other person who's really good at reading and writing and spelling, but then they struggle with the social aspect and the emotional intelligence. How are these people in the same category? So here's the thing. Part of the reason that it's so complex and it's so easy to misdiagnose or to miss the diagnosis altogether is because each person is so unique, right? Because your areas of giftedness can occur in so many different ways, right? Like, if you're gifted in math, that's going to look really different than being emotionally gifted, you know, emotionally intelligent in that way, or visually spatially gifted. So I like to break it down into three different categories of identifying the twice exceptional person. So the first is when the challenges mask the gifts. So for example, I worked with a student, she is dyslexic, and she had visual spatial gifts in the 98th percentile. Because what we measure in school is reading, writing, and spelling in the early years. Her challenges masked the fact that she had these high abilities in these other areas that aren't typically measured in school, right? And so we're looking at, okay, this child's struggling with memorizing her spelling words. This child is struggling with rote memorization of math facts. This child is struggling with learning to read. So we're going to focus on remediating those weaknesses, getting her up to speed. And along with that, along with this label of dyslexia, comes this perception that the child perhaps is less capable, right? And so we begin to treat the student in this certain way. Meanwhile, behind the scenes, this kid has pockets of giftedness. And what we know about being gifted is if you are gifted in one area, you have the characteristics of a gifted individual. This means that you're bright, you're often very highly attuned to your environment, you're really curious, you have this intensity, and oftentimes you have strong intuition. And so you've got all of these things going on behind the scenes, right? Where you're highly intelligent, highly attuned to your environment, and taking in all of these messages around what is wrong with me, I can't do these things that are apparently easy for everyone else. And we start to see some of the psychological impacts of that, right? And so that is an example of a student whose learning difference or challenge masks the fact that she also was highly intelligent and had creative gifts that were not identified or fostered in the school environment, right? Okay, so the second way it can present is the student whose gifts mask their challenges. So an example of this is the student whose gifts are in the traditionally valued school areas, such as math and reading and writing and spelling. This particular student was exceptional at this, particularly gifted in math. And so he went through all of the stages of school feeling like, oh, you're so smart, you're so smart, you're so good at all of this. However, he got to high school and sort of hit this tipping point where the demands of the environment and all the expectations were just a bit too much. And all of a sudden, his ADHD was exposed, his challenges with executive function. You know, he was having trouble remembering to turn things in, and he was very disorganized, and all of a sudden started experiencing the anxiety, the depression, the feelings of something's wrong with me, in the exact same way that the student who had challenges, who master gifts, experienced. So do you see how these two people who are both 2E, but because of where their strengths and where their challenges lie, they were interpreted in different ways. And they were really interpreted in different ways because of what we value in our school system, right? It's not that being gifted in math is superior to being visually spatially gifted. It's just that in our school environment, we measure how good you are in math right away. We don't measure how strong your visual, spatial, creative, emotional intelligence is in school. And so although they both had pockets of giftedness and pockets of challenge, one was identified as gifted and saddled with those expectations of you should be behaving in this way as someone who school and life comes easily. And the other person was saddled with the label of you're not as smart as everybody else. You're not as capable as everybody else. And in fact, you need special help and need to be pulled out to go to the teacher down the hall because you can't keep up with the regular curriculum. Both children ended up with very similar emotional experiences because they felt unseen. They felt they were smart at picking up on the messages of the environment that said something was wrong with them. They weren't measuring up, but it was just interpreted through two different lanes, if that makes sense. Okay, the third way it can show up is these strengths and challenges can kind of average each other out. So if you think about what I talked about with that asynchronous development, we've got those pockets of high ability up here. So if you're in the 99th percentile for math, but you're in the 5th percentile for processing speed, then when we average those scores out, particularly in a neuropsych to get your IQ, you're going to just look like you're an average student. So now we're catering to you like not like you're gifted or not like you have challenges, but that you're just average, which isn't what you need either. What these kids actually need is something called dual differentiation. And what dual differentiation means is that we need to be challenging students in their areas that they are strong. We need to be providing opportunities for these kids to engage in material that's meaningful to them, where they feel challenged, where they feel curious and intrigued, and they can dive deeply into subjects, because that is a component of the gifted personality. There's this desire to go deep into what they're passionate about and really spend time in that lane. And so providing that opportunity, and that's going to be different for all kids, right? Because everybody's got different strengths. So the dual part comes in that while we're providing the area of enrichment, we're also providing support in the things that are harder, right? Because that is the 2E experience. It's that I'm really good at certain things and I'm really struggling with others, and they both are valid and matter, right? And so when we can lead with what kids do well, and you use that as a bridge to leverage and support the things that are harder, what happens is the child finally feels seen in that school environment. They finally feel like, okay, someone's actually acknowledging what I do well and giving space to that, letting me engage in that. And that builds that confidence, that builds that buy-in, that builds in that desire to want to participate in learning. And when we do that in a way that also provides accommodations that supports those areas of struggle, it creates this emotional safety within the school environment that really allows kids to feel seen and safe to take risks and to participate and to put themselves out there and to engage in that way. You know, some of the very common challenges with this profile are challenges with emotional regulation, anxiety. You know, there's this risk aversion because there tends to be that perfectionism because they're afraid of failing, right? There's that fear of that if I put myself out there and fail, that rejection is so uncomfortable that I'd rather just not even try, you know? And that's where we see the kids that aren't motivated and they're disengaged. And it's just like, I'd rather not try than try and fail. But when we can create these environments where kids feel emotionally safe to take risks, emotionally safe to be seen because they feel seen, they feel validated for what they do well. And it's normalized that we all have different strengths and weaknesses and we don't all have to do it in this one certain way. It's like people can exhale. They can move out of fight or flight and actually be present to the environment and receptive to learning. But when we're anxious and we're on the defense and we've got now all these negative thought loops going that something's wrong with us and we're somehow not as smart as everyone else or as capable or we're not measuring up in some way, it really impacts our availability to be present and receptive to learning. And so this is why a strength-based approach is just essential for 2E learners. And the beautiful thing about it is that it benefits all kids. And, you know, I feel like I'm like a broken record with this. I've said this many times. And if you listen back to episode 6, where I talked to Anna Fabrega, and we talk a lot about this, what works for neurodivergent kids is actually what benefits all kids. So it's not like we have to do something special for the 2E kids. I mean, we do, but what benefits them benefits everybody. So let's do it for all children, right? Because here's the thing. Twice exceptional kids tend to hate accommodations. They hate to be singled out, to feel like they're different, to feel like, you know, something's wrong with them. Oftentimes they'll be offered an accommodation and they'll say they feel like it's cheating. They don't want it, you know? And so the trick with making the environment equitable and providing accommodations that they need and they're willing to receive is by making the environment strength-based for everyone. So that's going to look like there's more choices, there's more flexibility, there's more options to do things, and it's normalized to do things in different ways, right? So let's take, for example, you know, maybe a student who hates writing, but they're really artistic. Maybe they are that dyslexic child with dysgraphia. Maybe they're the ADHD kid sitting in the classroom and they're really creative. And maybe they kind of have that engineer's brain where they think more in pictures. And so they've got these big complex ideas, but when you tell them to sit down and write it on a piece of paper, they feel immediately stuck because we're leading with their challenges. So what if we flipped it? What if we thought about how can we lead with what this student does well? Maybe it's how do we bring in something that is artistic into this? You know, maybe they love Legos. So often it's like you can have the reward after you do the hard part. Like you can build with the Legos after you write your paper. What if you got to use building Legos as your pre-writing activity to create the setting, to create the characters, to create that visualization in your mind of what you want to write about? And now that kid is interested, right? Now that kid has buy-in. Now that kid wants to participate in this creative writing lesson because we started with what they loved. You know, that little engineer, that creative artist who loves to build and construct got to sit there and use their hands and use their imagination. And now their pre-writing is something they're excited to get out on paper, right? And then maybe the next step is you get to describe it. Get with a partner, with a friend, talk about it. Get your ideas out. And then let's move to the part where we write it down on paper. And then we support you with that step that's a little bit harder. But now, here's the difference. That child is engaged. That child is interested. That child is motivated. That child feels proud of the ideas and actually cares about the assignment and learning that skill of putting that pencil to the paper. Or maybe it's the typing it on the computer. But when we lead with what they do well, when we get curious about what they're good at, and we use that as the entry point into the stickier things, and then we have things in place to support the things that are harder. You know, maybe that child, once they get to the writing section, gets to use speech to text. You know, maybe there's an option where they get to collaborate with a friend, with a partner, and someone who does like writing. And maybe they collaborate and create a graphic novel where they do the illustrations and the partner, you know, writes the words. Or there's so many ways we can come at it, depending on what your learning objective is. You know, this is going to differ, but there's so many ways we can come at it where it's not stigmatizing, right? We're not saying go to the teacher down the hall to remediate you, or you get the easy assignment, or here's your accommodation that makes you feel like, oh, I got the accommodation because I'm not as smart as everybody else. It's like, no, we all do things differently. Here's what you're really good at. Let's bring that in first, and let's support you where you need some help. And this is going to make all kids more engaged, all kids more excited about learning, because we all have strengths. We all have weaknesses. You know, the 2E child has it in the more extreme, that asynchronous profile, where those highs are really extra high and those lows might be a little lower. But that is not that different than everyone, in the sense that we all have strengths and we all have weaknesses, and we can apply this model to benefit all students, right? So this is the beauty of bringing in a strength-based approach to our educational environments, is that it really allows for that emotional safety. It really allows kids to feel seen for what they're good at. It really supports these kiddos who have higher sensitivity and more sensitive nervous systems, because when we are acknowledged for what we're good at, when we're given opportunity to participate in a way that we're proud of, it changes the way we feel about ourselves, and that changes the way that we show up. It really is a game changer in how we can move forward in supporting these kids. So if you feel like, hey, this might be me, this might be my child, the best thing you can do is look for professionals who are neurodiversity affirming and ask them, are you familiar with Twice Exceptionality? And some are going to be and some are not. And that's okay. You know, my hope is that when in time, more and more people are going to become familiar with what it means to be 2E. In the meantime, align yourself with people who get it now. Align yourself with people who are willing to look at the strengths first and then support the challenges. And if you're a parent at home and you're looking at a neuropsych evaluation going, I don't know how to interpret this, here's my quick tip. Look at the subtests, because so often, you know, like I mentioned earlier, these kids that look like they're average because we're averaging asynchronous scores, we're averaging that 90th percentile with the 5 percentile, and then it looks like, oh, they have an average IQ. IQ scores can be very misleading with 2E kids. So what I'm going to suggest to you as parents is go through, highlight if you see any scores that look extra high. And if you see any scores that look extra low, highlight those and really get curious about them. And then think about, how can I bring in this area that they're strong in to support this area that they're struggling? How can I bring this area that they're good at more and more into the way that we do things at home, in the way that we support, you know, the academics as much as you can, in how you communicate with your child's teacher? Bringing that into the conversation is such an up level to that child's emotional experience with learning. So if you are looking for support with this, please reach out. In the show notes, it's linked. You can book a consultation with me. I'm happy to chat. I'm happy to help you talk through looking at a neuropsych evaluation. I'm happy to help you talk through next steps if you need to get your child tested. I am here for you. I also have customized support packages available as well, where we can work together a bit more in depth. And stay tuned for next week. We are going to be talking to Dr. Alex Reed about 2E, giftedness, ADHD, and just diving deeper into this subject. And she is another neurodiversity affirming psychologist and just a great resource to have in your pocket. So stay tuned for that episode. And I am just so grateful for my time here with you guys today. Until next time, friends. Thank you so much for joining me. If you liked this podcast, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and share it with a friend who might need it.
And if you're curious to discover where you're at in your nervous system and would like tools to support yourself in whatever state you're in so you can create more safety in your body to feel more grounded and connected to yourself, I've created a free quiz that allows you to discover your current state right now and receive a practice with your results for immediate support. Check out the show notes to grab it. Can't wait to chat with you next time.